It's time for Skin in the Game, and we have your front row seat to the action with marketing expert John Simperman and sports business journalist Tim Oshai.
They're talking about a $1 billion renovation.
Which is incredible.
And that's
for a hockey arena in the South, right?
That includes hotels, that includes multi-use.
Skin in the Game brings you the fresh and fascinating business news in the world of sports, a multi-billion dollar industry that has an economic impact on all of us.
This week on Skin in the Game, we explore the power of movement, strength, and the human body with the author of On Muscle, Banit Soy.
Muscle is one of the most adaptable tissues in the human body.
From science to personal story, hear how strength shapes not just performance, but life.
No matter where you are at, when you start moving it in a deliberate way for health and strength and wellness, you will be changed by that effort.
Coming up next on Skin in the Game, right after this.
Support for BTPM comes from our members and from Holiday Valley. Holiday Valley has winter fun everyone can agree on. Holiday Valley was voted the number 4 resort in the East by Ski Magazine readers. Holiday Valley features mountain coaster rides, snow tubing, the Tamarack Club Spa, and of course, skiing and snowboarding. At Holiday Valley, you can just relax too. Winter starts here. More information at holidayvalley.com.
Hey, welcome to a new episode of Skin in the Game. I'm your host, John Simperman, with my co-host,
Tim Oshai.
Hey, Tim, really excited for the guest today. Who do you have for us?
Oh, me too. So excited. You know I love bringing writers on this show.
Yes, and you forced me to read another
book. It's because I like to make John read books. Actually, John's a voracious reader. Well, but to answer your question, so excited to welcome Banit Soy, who is the author of, well, multiple great books, but her recent one is called On Muscle. She's also the author of Why We Swim, among other books. We're going to talk about that one too. But On Muscle, incredible read. We'll talk more about it shortly.
Yeah.
Really happy to have Banit on the show.
Yeah. No, and she talks about, and the book talks about, you know, sports, activity, physical movement. That's so important, you know, even in later years. Actually, it's even more important. And we'll talk about that. You know, you hear a lot about, oh, when you get older, you want to stay away from the weight room and the heavier weights.
Well, not true.
Her data and her book talk about just the opposite.
It's never too late to start. You know, she also makes, you know, is careful to say, start with a trainer or, you know, an expert in whatever sport it is that you are doing. But a little is great, and it's better than certainly better than nothing, but a little bit is great. Even more is better, right? And yeah, no matter what age you are, there's all kinds of benefits, physical, mental, social, to getting up and moving,
right?
And finding something you love. And she's a surfer too. And you know, that's on my bucket list to actually be able to stand on a surfboard.
And Banit lives out in the Bay Area where surfing is part of the culture and the lifestyle. And we're going to talk a little bit about that because that's what helped her assimilate into the Bay Area. But speaking about lifelong sports, you know, we hear a lot about pickleball, right? Golf, cycling. And by the way, I don't think this is funny, but it is funny that pickleball probably has the most injuries right now because people are taking quick turns and maybe not as loose as they should
be. They're going at it.
But I was interested, and I don't know if any of our listeners caught this, there's a team in London, Ontario. Every player on the team over 80 years of age, and they actually were part of the Ontario 55-plus Winter Games. So there you go. Hockey at the age of 80 and beyond.
Which is fantastic. You know, I have a great friend who plays in an adult hockey league. It's a co-ed league, mostly guys, a couple of women on the team, but her team captain, 71 or 72-year-old guy, who kills it out there.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm not surprised, actually, to hear there's a team of octogenarians who are playing at that level in Canada.
So we still have hope.
But I love to hear it. I love hearing those kind of stories.
Yeah. So we'll talk more with Banit about the role of sport and remaining physically active. But before that, you know, it is that time of year, one of our favorite times of year, and that's the start of baseball season.
Oh, I've been waiting for this one.
Yeah, so I'm excited, even though maybe the weather's not quite here yet. You know, the ballparks are playing ball, game on. And a couple things. We talked about here in Skin in the Game, Major League Baseball in particular had a lot of wind behind its sails coming out of last year. Phenomenal playoffs, record viewership for the World Series. And I think if you look at some of the numbers, I think the World Series was the highest rated World Series in close to 35 years.
Yeah, and in baseball, you know, baseball's over the past few years worked on some rule changes that have really worked well. They've sped up the game. They've made it, you know, not only faster, but more entertaining.
Yeah,
right?
They have.
So, yeah, baseball is in a really good place.
It is a good place. Now, there are some labor discussions on the horizon, so let's hope that that does not take the wind out of the sails. But the other thing, real quick, it was amazing World Baseball Classic. You know, coming off that the international fervor of the Olympics, baseball timed it perfect with the World Baseball Classic. Viewership, over 11 million viewers for the U.S. versus Venezuela. And if anybody had a chance to watch that game, it was awesome.
Yeah, even taking a step back from baseball, think of all the great international sports competitions we've seen over the past several months. Easy to say when there's the Olympics, but it goes beyond the Olympics too. So great time in baseball, great time in sports. And I love that in this, you know, this crazy TV broadcast viewership market, and it's so hard to get eyeballs on something on TV, sports is not still ruling. Sports is absolutely dominating.
Yeah. It was a great tournament. Team Canada had a great showing. While we are here based in the U.S. with our show, it was great to see the emotion and, quite frankly, what that win meant to Venezuela. I will argue that was their miracle on ice.
It felt that way. I mean, watching it absolutely takes you back, you know, for anybody who can remember it or who's seen the movie, it takes you back to what, 1980?
Right.
Like, classic. Talk about like kind of breaking down barriers. And yes, we all want our countries to win. But when you see that kind of joy after that hard fought a game and tournament, you got to love it.
Yeah.
And it makes great TV too.
Great TV. And
yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, excited baseball's upon us. Also excited to come up with our interview. So we have Bonnie Tsui, who is going to be joining us here on Skin in the Game. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Support for BTPM comes from our members and from Holiday Valley. Whether it's a beginner's or Black Diamond Trail, Holiday Valley features skiing and terrain at every level. There's also a team of snow sports instructors available to sharpen your skills and build your confidence. Holiday Valley was voted the number 4 resort in the East by Ski Magazine readers. Winter starts here. More information at holidayvalley.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Skin in the Game. And Bonnie Tsui, you are coming to us from California. I am jealous. Thank you for joining us over here on the East Coast.
Oh, it's great to be with you. I'm hoping to bring a little sunshine through your ears.
Well, I am so excited to talk surfing with you, among many, many things. And I don't know, John, have you ever surfed?
I have, yes. Didn't go well, but I've checked the box.
Well, Bonnie, something I learned.
It doesn't usually go well to start.
That's what I learned, right, from reading on Muscle. Something, I guess I knew this, but I got to tell you, reading on Muscle really reinforced for me is getting out and trying things and getting those muscles moving is far more the point than getting out it than, you know, and simply like mastering. I shouldn't say simply mastering, but mastering something, right?
Yeah. I mean, obviously we all want to look graceful doing it, but you know, the grace only comes after you've put in the work, right? And that's the sort of essential thing behind sports, all sports and physical, really any achievement really comes from the time that you put in. And that's what we don't see when we watch someone do something incredible.
You know, a few weeks back on that note, we're all watching the Olympics and seeing these superhuman feats. And it doesn't take the Olympics to see that either, right? You write in the book about visiting a college campus and, you know, and just seeing the athletes, these D1 athletes, doing things with their bodies that it seems like normal humans simply can't do. And what did you learn about the training it takes to, get somebody's, you know, muscles in their whole body, I mean, in a position, their mind in a position where they can go out there and, you know, pick a sport, perform it at that mastery level?
Oh, I just have so much. I mean, you know, talk about the Olympics, talk about any college campus in which all of these young active people are, you know, maybe they're just trying a sport for intramurals, you know, for the first time, or maybe they're, you know, they're NCAA athletes who are just really have been committed to their sport since they were very young children. I have such love and awe and respect for all of those shades and colors of athletes, I think, because, you know, we're doing it because it feels good and we love to move our bodies. And that's a very human thing. You know, I think with On Muscle, what I really learned is that how unsung our muscles are in terms of body intelligence, but they really do have their own kind of intelligence, and they're always talking all the time to the other systems in our bodies, including our brains. And, you know, one of the beautiful things about muscle is that, you know, as a tissue, it's, you know, obviously it mechanically moves our bodies through the world and, you know, obeys our commands or doesn't. You know, so many of us may remember from biology class, right, that there's voluntary and involuntary muscles, and they do all different kinds of things in our bodies. But even the most agile and athletically gifted of us can't, you know, doesn't have total control over everything that goes on in our bodies from a muscular standpoint. And there's, I find that very awesome and on all of the levels.
And Bonnie, what I've been following your work, awesome stuff. And I think what really,
thank you.
You're welcome. What really touched me was where you found this love and this passion, for lack of a better term, exercise, right? And can you just kind of take us back to, really, it came down to what I was digging through your work is, you know, the relationship you had with exercise and sport with your father.
Yeah, I think in Why We Swim, I wrote about the origin story of my family, which was that my parents met in a swimming pool in Hong Kong. You know, my dad was a lifeguard, my mom was a swimmer. And we grew up, my brother and I grew up on Long Island in New York, and we were immersed in water and swimming since a very young age, and we both joined the swim team and became lifeguards ourselves and kept swimming after that. And also that my father, you know, when I was growing up, was an artist and a martial artist, and he really still is both of those things. But the result of that is that my brother and I grew up in his downstairs studio. We were schooled in both the aesthetic appreciation of the body, but also, you know, not just form, but also function, because my dad was a black belt in karate, and he also practiced all these other martial arts, including taekwondo. And then he would just he would get us to sparring with each other, and he would just teach us. And we knew what, you know, dumbbells and barbells were, and we knew how to use them. We knew what the difference between a heavy bag and a, you know, speed bag and all of that. And in the studio is both the oil paints and, you know, the bench, the weight bench. And this is the environment that we grew up in. And so while we might be having, I just very much remember, you know, when I was 12, that was the year that the Sistine Chapel was the restoration of the Sistine Chapel was complete, right? So like Michelangelo's like amazing, incredible depictions of the human form, these glowing, really richly colored bodies that were just so rippling with muscle, like both the male and the female figures. And then my father kind of, you know, giving us a lesson in that. And then also then, you know, we'd be going off to swim team, you know, after school. And just like this deep appreciation, I think, again, like not clear to me until really in retrospect, how much that really affected my appreciation for what the body was capable of, you know, from an artistic standpoint, but also from what physicality really is and what joy it is to be able to do all things, the capability of your body.
And from what I also read was he treated you and your brother like equals, right? So you were
absolutely.
And I think that's a great lesson for the parents out there, and it seems like that obviously made an impact on you as well.
I mean, when your brother is, let's see, a year, he's a year and 8 days older than I am. And we were pretty much the same size for a lot of our childhood. And, you know, when your brother punches you or when your sister punches you at that age, it hurts the same. And so we'd be, you know, he would sick us on each other. And it was so funny because it's not what you would kind of see as a, at least at that time, it was like in the 80s, like just growing up that way. And yet it was really, I look back on those times with affection and just thinking how like funny and quirky my dad was with us. And he loved to play, right? He was a really great playmate and taught us a lot along the way.
Yeah, Tim, Bonnie's father's, I don't know, he just seems a lot like me. And here's, Bonnie, here's what I'm going to say.
Yeah, I want to know where you're going with this.
Well, tell me about that.
Well, no, I just, you know, when we were, you know, back in LA, you know, I have two kids and those were the roller hockey days, right?
Right.
And and I just remember us dressing up my daughter as a goalie. and then, you know, my older son, who, you know, Jake is probably a year and a half older than Hannah. Yeah. She'd be playing goalie and, you know, we were firing pucks at her. But she would reciprocate. I think what that did, and it sounds like from your experiences, you know, and now they're both avid backcountry skiers and adventurers, but I do think making it fun and treating the kids as equals and then, yeah, let them figure it out among themselves, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, so much of what we inherit from, you know, society and culture at large is unconscious, right? I mean, you know, you maybe you're on the playground and you hear someone say, you know, like, or you watch someone react to a girl falling and injuring sort of like a little, you know, the sort of like kids just scrapping around, nothing serious, but like falling and or tripping, and then a boy falling or tripping and how they're treated afterwards, you know, kind of like, do you say, what are they saying? Like, is there like a kind of reaction that feels like more precious or more like, oh, you're more delicate? You know, again, like I give this example because it's sort of a fundamental, like basic, you know, early childhood thing to be like fall and have scrapes on the playground. And yet, you know, close observation, you can kind of see sometimes boys and girls are treated differently in those circumstances. And it's like a million different things like that as you grow up through life. It's not necessarily clear to you until you really start paying attention to all these mixed messages, both verbal and nonverbal, you know, body language, just like who's allowed to be strong, who is invited to, you know, go to the like dirt bike path, you know, and explore and have fun and have an adventure, and who is and who is not. And again, like I do think things are changing in a way, but I also in a way that's very positive and progressive and more towards girls and boys, men and women being invited into sports in the same way. But, you know, that wasn't always the case.
You know, hearing you guys talk about this too, Bonnie, I'm thinking of a story you share in the book about the guy who created the Incredible Hulk.
Mm.
And the original inspiration for that was actually a mom lifting a car off her child who was trapped underneath. Do I have that right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Then, of course, the Hulk goes out and becomes this big, muscular, green man. But
yes. Who, like, can never remember what he's done when he's the Hulk. I mean, it's also very interesting, right, to kind of peel back the layers. And you'd think, oh, wow, Jack Kirby, you know, the cartoonist, the creator of the Incredible Hulk, maybe he was an incredible feminist for his time. But actually, when he's telling the story about watching this woman, you know, like, see her kid kind of crawl under the running board of a parked car and then being so freaked out that her child is under the car, like lifts up the car, you know, pulls her child out. He tells the story and you think, wow, like the Hulk was inspired by mom with the baby. And in fact, he says something like, I'm not saying she was a slender woman, you know, like just kind of like basically backhanded compliment, like just slighting her femininity at the same time. He's like, oh yeah, she did this. And I took inspiration from it. It's all, again, like fascinating, a complex story to unpack and just be like, what is that all about? You know,
on that note of complex subjects to unpack, I was interested when I, you know, when I pulled On Muscle off the shelf and started reading it to see, okay, so where is she going to take me on this? And as a writer, I'm thinking, where did you go? What did you, you know, who did you talk to? What did you do to tell this story? And as a reader, I'm thinking, so what is the story going to be? And I'm not going to turn this into a book review right now, other than to say,
although, by the way, it's getting great reviews.
Incredible, incredible, which is what I'm going to say. I just absolutely loved sitting down and reading about strength and that kind of mind-body connection and how it has played out over history and through sports, yes, but mm-hmm. health, wellness, through families. So we'll let, you know, John and I, after we're done with this interview, Bonnie, we're going to sit back and chat. And John, I'll go into book review mode then. And Bonnie, not take your time other than to say thanks for writing it. But I am curious about one thing. You make clear in the book, and especially in interviews you've done on podcasts and radio shows like this, that one of your motivations for writing it was to find a way to reconnect with your father, who now lives on the other side of the world. And, you know, and you were writing this during the pandemic and you really couldn't see him. And I am curious if and how you feel it brought you closer together. Like, did it accomplish that goal for you?
You know, we talked earlier about my childhood with him, which was felt so singular and formative to me. And, you know, he lives in China now and has for many years after my parents got divorced. And I don't see him very often. And so when the pandemic started, and of course, you know, China was the first place to close down and then one of the last places to open up. And I really had no idea when I was going to see him again. So many of us were so shaken by this very thing, right? When will we see our loved ones again in person? And I think by virtue of him being so far away and just not, and also that our relationship really is best when we're physically in front of each other, right? As so many relationships are, we are humans and humans like to see each other, like to be in the presence of one another, like to read each other's faces and body language, hear each other's voices in real life. I tell the truth when I say that, like, I really wanted to think of like what I could be working on during this time that would help me to stay in some kind of communication with him that felt meaningful, right? So things that we could talk about that I knew, you know, I could ask him what he was, you know, what kind of exercises he was doing, you know, in any given day, or what, you know, what is the, you know, his normal circuit around his, where he lives in China in this like compound, like, what is that like? Like, what are his physical movements and his perambulations, I guess you could call it. And so I could kind of then trace over that in my mind. And then sometimes I would be driving to the surf, like in the dark, you know, so early, early morning here before the sunrise and, you know, later in the day for him in China. And it would almost be like if I was talking to him on the phone in the car and the speakers, like it was almost like he was in the car with me, right? Telling me what he was doing and what he was thinking about. And again, like he's not a person who like is really great on the phone or likes to text or anything like that. And so it was like pulling teeth, but every one of us knows people like that. And so you really try to, like, you think about how to connect, how to make that connection feel true. And that was my way of doing that. Like, what could I do as a daughter, as a writer, as a person who has this interest in the life of the body and what it means beyond the body itself? I think that really did motivate me to do that. And of course, then that's the kind of heartbeat of the book, right? And yet it's also populated with all these other characters and stories in which muscles drive the narrative. And that was really important to me because it's not just about me. It's about, but I know that this was what made me on one very personal level want to write a book like this. And it's, again, a complex book. It has lots of different stories and different ideas and kind of investigating both the stuff of muscle and what it means to us as people, as storytellers, you know, as athletes and everything in between. And as a journalist, I am really a generalist. And so my mind is curious on many different disciplines, including science and art history and culture and all of this and all of the stuff. And so I hope that comes through, and I hope it comes through in a way that can reach a lot of different readers.
And Bonnie, speaking of on muscle and, you know, why it does matter, if you could give our listeners just a little kind of the 30,000 foot view of this Oslo research and the connection between muscle and longevity. I mean, that's a pretty key takeaway.
Yes. So one of the, okay, so the book is organized in five different sections, and they're all kind of characteristics of muscle. So strength and form and action and flexibility and endurance. And so these are also, you know, these are qualities of muscle itself, but also they are qualities and characteristics that we admire in people, like as character traits. And they kind of double in this way, right? It's like metaphor is both the actual thing and a metaphor for what we value. And so again, let the language gives us away. And I love in flexibility, there's a section about muscle memory and sort of like how our muscles themselves, our cells, have a memory of prior exercise and remember how to get strong again. And they also have memory, epigenetic memory of atrophy. And so it's really interesting how your muscles can be primed to respond to exercise in the future by strength training and other exercise. And then if you have periods of injury or illness, you know, your muscles kind of also respond in that way and remember. Sort of again, like epigenetics as a refresher is like, it's not that the genes of the cells themselves change, it's that how, which ones are turned on and off and what they do. And so to me, the idea that our bodies and our muscle cells and our bodies in general remember all of these things. I mean, this is accrual of all the experiences in life, right? Like, and how your muscles respond is almost like it's a little bit of a tug of war between like the positive events of exercise, you know, periods of strength, and the negative events and memories of injury and illness. And like, if you think about it, that's what aging is. It's like this, you know, tug of war of like, over time, like, which are there more of? And so like, how does your body fare over that period of time? And it's both extremely existential. And so this is what you were getting at with this Oslo research. I went to visit the lab of this muscle scientist named Adam Sharples in his lab in Norway. His lab was the first to show that our human skeletal muscle had a memory of past exercise and epigenetic memory of that. And he was a professional rugby player in the UK Rugby League, and he had spent his whole youth, I mean, he's only in his 40s now, but he had spent his whole youth being this big muscular athlete, and then was always kind of like noticing sort of anecdotally what athletes do notice, which is like, you know, even if you're in the off season or even if you have an injury, you can bounce back pretty quickly with like in terms of your strength and mass, like in the weight room, because you've been trained to do that. And then applying that learning and knowledge to what happens when we age and we get weaker. And like we are, how do you protect against those later life episodes of injury and illness where you aren't as active? And the answer really is like, you know, strength training paired with other cardiovascular exercise is just so, I mean, that is like the best thing that you could, single most important exercise you can do to protect yourself, your health as you age. And it's just, if you ask me what my takeaway is, it's just how important muscle is and lifting weights is throughout your entire life, and especially as you get older.
We're here with Bonnie Tsui, the author of On Muscle. Bonnie, I'm thinking back to an interview I did probably 5-10 years ago with the actor Dick Van Dyke when he was turning either, I guess, 90 or 95, but he was hitting a milestone age. And this was an email interview. And I remember emailing a question essentially, you know, asking about his optimism because he's, you know, such an optimistic guy. And I remember his answer, you know, talking about dancing. And essentially, and I'm paraphrasing it, it was how, you know, I dance, and how can you not be happy if you're dancing? Mm-hmm. And
I love that.
I love it too, and it stuck with me. And I wish I knew how to dance better, but he didn't say you have to be good at it. He just said you got to do it, right? My question for you though is, you know, can you take us a little deeper in that connection between physical activity and happiness? Because, you know, Dick Van Dyke is talking about dancing, but we talk to tennis players, golfers, you know, any number of physical activities. We know that those bring joy, but take us into the why and how of that.
I love how when I started to look into this question about how movement and you know, things like dancing and jumping and like all of those things make us happy. And why do we jump for joy and all of that? And I loved finding that Charles Darwin had a lot to say about jumping and how it is not only something that humans do, it's like across species, right? So dogs jumping and horses frisking and kids, you know, seeing little kids jumping with joy and all of that. And even whales breaching. I think it has to do with, you know, escaping gravity, right? And it's not only that, but it is all of these chemical changes that happen when you start using your muscles to do something like jumping. And that Darwin observed was like, this is something that is common across species. And so it's not only that, you know, you start to, you jump to express the internal emotion of joy, but that movement itself brings you to joy. And so I loved how he talked about this is a two-way street, that, you know, that when you are moving your body, it makes you happy, but also happiness drives you to move your body. And it's again, like, it's how we are wired that way. Our brains love it when our muscles are moving, because like when our muscles move, they're an endocrine tissue, right? So they're the second you start exercising, within minutes, you know, all of these physiological changes happen, right? So your muscles actually release signaling molecules called myokines, and they travel all around your body, including to your brain. And, you know, your metabolism is ramped up, your inflammation is being controlled, your immune system is like paying attention, you know, it's health on all these different levels. And your brain, like, our brains get bigger with exercise. Like our hippocampuses, centers of learning and memory, get bigger with regular exercise. And it's like, oh, duh, like bulking up our muscles really bulks up our brains. And this is why, you know, kids do better in school with PE. Like, I mean, it's just like all these things you kind of know to be true, you know, not just that exercise kind of both settles your body, you know, after this like bout of exertion, but it also brings all of these great, you know, it really does get the juices flowing. And it also releases all of these chemicals, as we do, you know, we know, like including dopamine and endocannabinoids, that really give us that feeling of well-being. And that is because it's good for us. It feels good because it is good for us.
And Bonnie, I love how that takes what there used to be, you know, it still is in some cases, a negative stereotype about being quote unquote a muscle head. And actually, this is a positive. And I think that, and you know better than I, and you're the expert in this category, but even obviously, you know, women now in the weight room, lifting heavier weights, you know, and getting rid of these stereotypes.
Yeah, it's so funny to me to think back, especially I think like sort of mid-century, like mid-20th century, these like, you know, the whole cartoon dynamic between like the skinny 98-pound weakling and then like someone like Charles Atlas, you know, like these cartoons, these and if you had a lot of muscles that they were seen as taking away from your brain,
right.
That, you know, it was at the cost, you know, expense of one or the other, and that you couldn't be both, like you couldn't be both smart and be muscular. I mean, and you know, and I think like it's funny how that idea or that picture still kind of affects sometimes when we talk about professional athletes or prominent iconic athletes speaking up as if they weren't you know, whole people with thoughts and opinions of their own, that they should, you know, they shouldn't be speaking out. And it's so interesting because like that is like a, it's related, right, to this idea of like stay in your lane. But aren't we all people with thoughts and opinions of our own, and whether or not we have big muscles?
Right. Well, it's funny. I was, you know, when you look at in your state of California, right, probably one of the most famous quote-unquote muscle heads would be what, Arnold Schwarzenegger, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So obviously, you know, he also had a brain, and you know, it was a long shot, but became governor. So, you know,
he is a savvy guy.
He's well, he made his money, and yeah, I mean, his first millions were made in real estate.
Yeah, entrepreneur, yeah. as well. Yeah. Right, right.
Exactly. He knew what, you know, like all of these, if you really look into his story and you know, read about his life, like he knew and was very aware of what he was trying to do from a very young age. And I think he even exceeded his own expectations of what he could do in America.
You know, Bonnie, that kind of traditional perception we're talking about, you know, about a, let's say a muscular, like a really muscular man, I'll go with a straight stereotype here. A well-muscled man is a, you know, beautiful man, right? Smart or not smart, even aside, but like a, you know, but that would be the symbol of a, you know, handsome, strong, beautiful man, right? Somebody with, you know, sharp, sharp muscles. What I learned, I guess I've observed this and never thought of it this way, but what I learned from your book and what I'd love you to talk a little more about is that's a Western stereotype, right? I mean, that is not true all around the world.
Yeah, I wanted to get at these ideals of beauty and kind of investigate, you know, where did they come from? Like, why do we have this persistent view of muscularity being something that's for men and not for women? But also, where are these ideas of like this kind of Michelangelo type body, Arnold Schwarzenegger bodybuilders type body being something that's beautiful? And when I kind of went back into the archives, I was curious about just the ideas of health as well. And right, so if you look back to you know, the Greeks, ancient Greeks, they did portray the body, you know, with these Herculean ripples, even in a time when they didn't actually know what muscles were. They didn't understand the anatomy quite, and they put all these bulging ripples where there weren't actually muscles. But the idea that this articulated body was a positive thing, right? It showed discipline, it showed strength, it showed, you know, again, like a sound mind and body and all of that. And then sort of through sort of Renaissance portrayals, again, in the Western world, of this healthy body. So if you kind of go back to ancient Greek medicine versus ancient Chinese medicine, you know, these sort of like depictions of the body, they did not differentiate, you know, between muscle and like flesh more generally for a long time. And looking at, you know, like Vesalius, right? Like the kind of like those anatomy, the father of modern anatomy, and sort of like these books of like dissections, but also that these, that it was like a heroic pose of a man, like with all of these muscles and kind of peeling back the layers and understanding the body in this way and how important muscle was. And then you look at roughly contemporaneous, I mean, maybe a couple hundred years of Chinese acupuncture maps of the body. And it's like a body that was very, very healthy was a body that looked, you know, it was distinguished by the flow of qi, right? So energy through the body. And a body that was healthy was one that was full of qi, and like, and the way the body looked was like a yogi with a full belly. And you're kind of like, that looks like a beer gut from this, you know, Western perspective. And yet, like, that was what was healthy. It was like you exercised, but the exercise were meant to promote the flow and flexibility and strength and power of qi. It was not about having these muscles that bulged and rippled. And so that was the sort of like the divergence of like Chinese and Western medicine, and these like depictions of the body in that way. And I thought that was so fascinating because it just kind of stuck a little stake in where that happened and when that happened and how it happened, and sort of like, again, the trickle down effects of these different interpretations of what was healthy and what was beautiful. And then, of course, now in this like day and age, everything is so globally flattened because of the internet, and how these cultural norms can travel, they travel at the speed of light, really, like, you know, and just go all around. And so you see bodybuilders in China, you see female bodybuilders in China, you see, like, you know, at the same time, that was not something that was very common, you know, in very recent history.
We're here on Skin in the Game with Bonnie Tsui, the author of the recently released On Muscle, and of the book Why We Swim, which, Bonnie, I believe came out 6 years ago, just before the pandemic, when swimming, I don't know if swimming gained popular. It seemed like it sure did. I know a lot of people who are out surfing. You're a surfer, and so, John, I'm gonna slip. I don't even have to slip in a surf question here, because it shows up in both the books. Bonnie, I know you learned to surf when you were in your 30s, and I'm curious what that was like for you. 30s, certainly not old, but certainly also not the age typically when people pick up at least a physically challenging sport like that for the first time. So how did that go, and did age and that muscle memory that you developed for other activities, do you feel like that played into your ability to do it?
That's such a good question. I grew up swimming, as you know, and I never was really interested in surfing. I just wasn't. I would see people surfing at the beach, and just, I didn't really understand it. Like, I saw it, but the physics was not apparent to me of how that would work. And, you know, I moved here to California, and I was actually in my late 20s when I started to be interested in surfing. And I think it was kind of living here in California, moving from New York, you know, swimming a lot. I think I started to feel at home here in California when I started surfing. And because I found something that was not something that I did back in New York, you know, and it was like almost like it was a new me, a new person was possible here. And I think that's what learning something new, and, you know, certainly a sport or something that you practice physically and get joy from, is an investment in that, right? It's like an investment in a new you, and it's someone who's like a different chapter of your life. And so I was a great paddler, right? Because I was a swimmer and for my whole life. And so I was really a strong paddler. But of course, that's only one part of surfing. And I just had friends who, I had a critical mass of friends who were surfing regularly, and I would just go out with them. Really, like, my first surf here after I decided to start was that my friend took me out to Ocean Beach. And Ocean Beach, if you know anything about surfing in Northern California, is just like a famously, legendarily, or rather infamously, like, hazardous, heavy shore pound kind of place to surf. And I remember, you know, I had surfed a few times in Hawaii, and I surfed in Southern California. And I had come back from a work trip, and I was like, oh, you know, I just tried in Malibu, and I think I want to try surfing here finally. And my friends took me out. They said, oh, it's not going to be a big day at Ocean Beach. And we get there, and I'm thinking, it looks kind of big. At that time, it was just like all guy friends I had. And they were just like, oh, yeah, you know, it is bigger than we thought. But the fates smiled at me, because, like, you know, when you paddle out on a day, even a mellow day at Ocean Beach, like, if your hair is dry by the time you get out beyond the sets, it's a miracle. It's a wonderful thing. And that first paddle out, I had a dry head paddle and was just like, this is beautiful. This is amazing. The dolphins are out. Sun's out. And then my friend says, watch out for sneaker waves. And I said, what's a sneaker wave? And he said, that's a sneaker wave, you know, basically a big kind of rogue wave that kind of comes in and is not part of a set. And he starts paddling out to go over it, you know, out towards the ocean. And I turn around and start paddling in towards the beach, because I'm thinking, maybe I'll catch this wave. And I did catch the wave, and I rode it all the way, like a freight train, all the way into shore. And I just could not believe it. I proceeded to try to paddle back out, and I got hooked by a fisherman on my neoprene, on my wetsuit. And it took me 15 minutes to get back out, because guess what? It wasn't a dry head paddle anymore. I tell this story because it illustrates, like, you know, the joy and surprise and the range of conditions that you can encounter in one, I mean, really the space of like one wave in this session, being able to handle myself out there is something I also really take pride in. And I think that's like something that, again, it feeds in this whole idea of like capability and adaptability and change as you age. Like when I was in my 20s, early 20s, I did not know how to surf. I did not know how to handle myself. You know, now I'm in my 40s and I know so much more about, you know, surfing, and I surf so much better than I did at the end of my 20s when I first learned. And it's just kind of like, wow, like that's pretty cool.
Well, buddy, that's awesome that, you know, and it just sounds to me as that helped you also kind of adapt to kind of the lifestyle and the culture of California, right? You know, and kind of relate back to us here on the other side of the country, you know, taking mm-hmm. up skiing, taking up skating, yes. right? Just to be part of that. But I think the message there is you got a little bit later start on surfing, and also in the book on muscle, you talk about it's never too late. And you talk about, you know, whatever your age is, you know, pick up a barbell, get out, work. If you could just, I just want to wrap on that for our listeners so that it's never too late, right?
It really isn't. That is, you know, the other takeaway, which is from On Muscle, which is, you know, even if you have never picked up a weight in your life, and even if you never really regularly practice a sport, like I know people in their 70s who started doing both of these things, and their lives have been changed by this, you know, and, you know, are masters athletes, just like have a whole new, like stop taking all their medications and like, you know, have a whole new community of people who they just really love and enjoy. And it is not an exaggeration to say that you can change your life by doing this. I certainly have seen this firsthand, and I do feel this firsthand as well, like whatever stage of life, because muscle is so adaptable, right? So muscle is one of the most adaptable tissues in the human body. And no matter where you are at when you start moving it, and like moving it in a more concerted way, moving it in a deliberate way for health and strength and wellness, you will be changed by that effort. And I just love that. I love that people come up to me and ask me, is it too late for me? And I'm like, absolutely not. It is not. And the science bears it out. And, you know, I point to all these stories in the book because it's just, I have the evidence. You know, I love saying like, hey, I have the evidence to show you that this is true. And it backs it up and can send them off on their way, like finding both, you know, lifting weights as something that we should all be doing. And also, I think it's just as important to say, find the movement that brings you joy with it. You know, like both of those things are so important and equally important and carry equal weight in like having a healthy and long life.
Well, Bonnie, we really appreciate you being here with us today. Thank you for On Muscle. Thank you for giving me hope that I can still learn to be a surfer.
it's not too late.
Giving me a very good reason to come out to the California coastline. And giving John one more sport to encourage me to get out there and do. That's an ongoing thing we have around here.
We're going to turn Tim into a decathlete after all with lots of different activities.
Oh, I will take it. But seriously, Bonnie.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. And we'll be right back on Skin in the Game.
Support for BTPM comes from our members and from Holiday Valley. Holiday Valley was voted the number 4 resort in the East by Ski Magazine readers. More snowmaking, more lifts, more ways to play. Holiday Valley is a mix of exciting terrain on an independent mountain that brings out your best. From the first chair to the last run, Holiday Valley is what winter was made for. Holiday Valley, your winter done right. More information at holidayvalley.com.
Hey, welcome back to Skin in the Game. And again, great discussion, Tim. Thank you for bringing Bonnie onto the podcast. You know, I have not been through the entire book yet. Sounds like you have.
I, not only, John, have read the entire book.
Your notes are there.
I have. I'm showing John the book here with tabs and highlights.
Wow.
And it's quite the read.
Well, and it's not, and I think it's important for our listeners and our viewers to know, this isn't an exercise book. I mean, you look at the title, On Muscle, you think, oh, this is a fitness book. And it's much, much more and much more important than that.
Right, right. It's, you know, writer talk here. It's a narrative nonfiction book. It's a book that takes you on Bonnie's journey as a writer to explore the brain-body connection, to explore what our muscles can do, to explore what our bodies can do as we get older, to explore how we connect physically with other people. And that, and what I mean by that is by doing physical activity with other people. Something we didn't get into in the conversation with her, but is a really powerful part of the book, is also, you know, what happens when somebody loses control of parts of their body, you know, either through a disease or through an accident, and just how powerfully the brain can connect with the muscles. And even if it can't connect with all of the body, it can see it, and you can even visually rebuild some of that connection. It's fascinating. It's a deep read. But and here's my book review part. She's a great writer. She's a chatty, conversational writer. So it's one of those books where, you know, it's a smart read, but you feel like you're talking with a friend.
Yeah.
It's not a textbook. And to your point, it's certainly not a workout book.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you talk about people's age versus their cognitive age, right? How old they think they are or how they act. And I think staying active and exercising, and whether it's a beer league, softball league, or a hockey league, or in this case, you know, picking up surfing, biking, there's just ways to, you know, keep healthy, right? Mm-hmm. And I think this book also emphasizes, you know, the science behind that, that there is connections between weight lifting and exercise to longevity. There's science that backs that up.
Yeah, and it helps with your mental health too. It's not, you know, there's a fine line here with what we're saying. It can take anybody and help you feel happier, right? But if you're struggling as well, and the book gets into this, some of the chemicals that are released when you exercise are, you know, will actually lift your mood. There's a quote in Bonnie's book, in On Muscle, and it's not from Bonnie, it's from one of her sources, who talks about exercise being like a pharmacy for your muscles. You know, the through line is you capture there, it's longevity.
Right.
And here's one that I thought was true, interesting, and I think true widely, but she was talking about her dad. It can also make you look a heck of a lot younger.
You know, I loved how Bonnie touched on, yes, it's good for your body, it's good for your brain, but find activities that you also find fun, right? You know, it shouldn't be looked at as, you know, it's called a workout, but it should not look like it's work. And what I loved is how we kind of wrapped up the conversation with Bonnie is it's never too late. And what she's seen with people in their 70s who are now for the first time getting into a weight room and exercising, and just what it's done both physically and mentally for their health.
Right. And socially as well. And you know, whether it's older people who may live alone or just not be surrounded by as many people as they were in their younger years, or, you know, for anybody, you could be a lot younger. And if you're living or working alone or working at home, that physical activity, that exercise, those fitness classes, dance classes, if you're in a place where you can go surfing with a group.
You can surf on Lake Erie.
You absolutely can surf on Lake Erie.
Now, Tim, you have no excuses.
Oh, yeah. Kite surfing. Yeah, I see it all the time. So a lot of this isn't just about you and your body. It is that, but you and your body and the other people around you.
Yeah, yeah. And as this is a sports business show, I think there is a big business aspect to this. And whether it's the gym industry, whether it's the rock climbing wall industry, you're seeing a lot more of that. You're seeing more of these adult leagues, rec leagues. We'll save an entire episode for pickleball, but on Skin in the Game, we've had conversations with the golf industry and the ski industry, and you're seeing more and more older adults either jumping into it for the first time or sticking with these sports for a lifetime.
And I'll even throw strength training in there too. And, you know, Bonnie writes about how, you know, up till about the 1970s, strength training generally wasn't a part of big league pro team sport. Right. But around the 70s, you know, which you brought up Arnold Schwarzenegger, around the time that bodybuilding or, you know, weightlifting became more popularized, you started seeing pro sports teams and leagues embrace the idea of having strength and conditioning coaches. We've seen it for a long time, for that matter, at the collegiate level.
Right.
And you're seeing it at high schools now, too. You know, I know a high school that just raised tens of thousands of dollars to step up their gym
mm-hmm.
to help not only help the current athletes, but indirectly to entice younger middle school athletes to come there for high school.
Right.
So
right.
go back a few decades, none of that was, well, that was rarely true, if ever true.
Right. But now it's a big industry and it continues to grow. And, you know, I think every local or regional gym should have On Muscle as part of the reading for their members, because I think it will motivate more and more people to get into and stay at their gym.
And have you ever been a part of a book club?
I have not. No,
I have not.
Yes,
either.
I have with Tim O'Shea. I'm part of your,
I'm part of
your book club.
I have kind of turned Skin in the Game into a book club. I wasn't even going there with this, but that is true. I did want to, what I'm thinking though is for folks who are part of a book club, this is the kind of book you can see. I mean, we're going to have to wrap this show shortly. We could sit here and talk about On Muscle with Bonnie and without Bonnie, you know, for quite some time. It really it'll make you think. Honestly, it'll make you get out to move. This will sound like a corny thing to say or maybe predictable, but I hadn't been to the gym in a while, John, when I was reading this book over the weekend, 2 days in a row at the gym.
Awesome. Thank you, Bonnie, for joining us on Skin in the Game, and thank you for listening. Until next time, this is John Simperman and
Tim O'Shea.
Skin in the Game is a production of Buffalo, Toronto Public Media. You can catch up with all past episodes on btpm.org/skininthegame. Or at the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel. Thanks for listening.